few years after I was ordained, I thought that one of the missing bits in my skill set, sorry about that jargony word, as a priest was as a counsellor or in counselling skills. And so I went along to what was called then the Campbell Counselling Centre in Christchurch for a year-long course in how to do that. And what I discovered was there was the counselling world's full of different conflicting schools of thought about the best way to be a counsellor. It's like education is a new fad every few years. And there's really quite a variety of approaches that people use. We've given a smattering of all these different techniques. And a conclusion I've come to is that, to some extent, counsellors themselves, some of them good friends of mine, aren't all that insightful people, but there's something about them that invites people to trust them, to kind of put their confidence in them. And they've got that kind of natural kind of rapport-building skill that also, with a lifetime of experience, makes people want to trust them. They are, if you like, professional befrienders. And as professional befrienders, what they tend to be able to give people is a basic emotional literacy, the ability to handle themselves well in certain stressful situations, such as conflict, to acquire a certain insight into their own actions, which they may have lacked before, a kind of rudimentary ability to see themselves as others see them, and also other things like what to do to make yourself feel refreshed when you're having time out. Well, that's when a counselling relationship goes well. It's also about challenge, I think, challenging people out of certain ruts and unproductive ways of operating as a human being, not just a matter of supporting and befriending them. Well, I say all this by way of introduction to talking about those wonderful words from Paul this morning to the church at Philippi, which is also about good advice for daily living. What you might call sanctified common sense. Paul's taking a different kind of approach, talking about the kind of distinctive lifestyle that Christians are supposed to have that marks them out as different and special kind of people. And he does it in the context of assuming that he and the Christians at Philippi are working to a different time scale to their contemporaries. In their way of looking at the world's kind of running out of energy, running out of oomph, its battery is running flat. The traditional early Christian way of talking about it was that this is a world characterized by sin, suffering, and death. For those of a more scientific disposition these days, we talk about the heat death of the universe, that in the end, the stars will cool and life forms will snuff out and gutter out one by one throughout the galaxy. Well, that takes a very long time scale indeed. But Paul and those first Christians at Philippi assume that this world is, as I say, running out of steam. It's an old, dying world. There's occasional cruel surges of demonic energy, but by and large, it's spiraling down. But in these little fragile communities that's just been started often by Paul around the Mediterranean world, there's something else at work. The risen life of Jesus is kind of working its way into these communities with a freshness and a vividness and a new start energy. And as these Christians gather around the table of the Lord to meet the risen Lord, there are anticipations of all this, a kind of first start of it all, as this new style of living, this new energy is working its way through the old world into a new style of existence. And there's several dimensions to all this. First of all, the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Jesus, is working like an enzyme through the lives of these Christians. The Holy Spirit's suggesting and kind of pushing for a different style of living, both in Christians' affairs of daily living, but also in their inside, inward attitudes. Once the Holy Spirit tends to be into reconciliations, not content with old broken relationships, and people resting content with reservoirs of ill feeling and slights from the past, wants people to overcome that, to assume new responsibilities joyfully with a sense of imaginative new beginnings. And it's not just about individual successes in living or groovy feelings of spiritual success, which is the way some people interpret a spirit-led existence. But it also works itself out in the collective life of the church. You know, in Paul's mind, what leads to people in a kind of network of healthy, supportive relationships that makes the church an effective operational entity, this matters just as much as ecstasy and prayer or kind of success as an individual daily living. So that, sound leadership decisions, good financial acumen, well-run meetings, the ability to get on with difficult people, the ability to make the church work at that kind of practical, collective sense as an operational entity, that counts for a lot with Paul. These two are signs of the Spirit among us. And so what Paul is saying today is that let's be open to this new, fresh dimension of resurrection living and embrace it and allow it to begin to work away at the centre of us, as the Spirit is both the suggester of it, the reinforcer of it, and also who draws us towards us by the kind of attractiveness of this new style of living. A new people for a new age. Trainee citizens of heaven with their eyes fixed on the future, marching to a different drum to their contemporaries, who've also experienced some of the first fruits of all that and want more. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.